You're listening to Almost Famous with Jim Francis Meza, only on LA Talk Radio.
And we're off to the races. Oh my God, it's been a very eventful week for me. As you know, some of you guys do know and others don't. Mom went to be with the Lord last week. And she lost her battle to cancer. She had stage 4 breast cancer. And I lost my one-of-a-kind, unique mother, nourishing mother. Anything like any son, the mother that any son wished to have or fancy to have, I had. She was there with me every step of the way, loved me, nurtured me, took care of me through the good and bad. And I did the very same thing towards her, the end of her life. Or as I like to say, she graduated to heaven, to a better place. So I love you, Miss Angelica de Meza Stein. I'm going to take a moment of silence. It was pretty devastating. I was destroyed. I still am somehow, but I managed to recover, turn that corner right quick, because I have a promise of God that we're once again going to see her in heaven, as I like to understand it. And so she lives in my heart now. She watches over me along with my sister Liz, who passed away some moons ago. Okay. So I'm going to shift gears here and try to get this wonderful interview off the ground. I'm very happy otherwise and excited because my dear good friend, who I've known for a while, probably I've known for, I would say about three years. We studied together. We worked as actors in a film, in a short film, Jenny and Susie. And I have the pleasure of interviewing and let me make a make a suggestion here. I hope you guys open your ears because this lady has so much wisdom. Not only is she an actress, you know, on and off stage, she's made, you know, she's obviously starred in films, short films, but also, guys, she was a former scientist. Get that. My very first scientist person here. she has an MS in biology and a BS in clinical lab science. Holy Mother of God.
I didn't tell you that. Where did you find that?
Well, you'll be surprised. I sift. I go down the burrow and learn quite a bit about you in a short span of time. I've been studying you for a week. No, kidding. But I'm very delighted to have you here. Anna Marie Strickland, guys.
Thank you, Jimmy Meza.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. You know, it's been a minute since you and I had, like, you know, come to the agreement of when we're going to have. We just keep missing each other because you had, like, you were shooting something, and then I got sick at one point, and then we decided on, all right, we're going to hold it off. We put it off in the back burner, but finally we're here.
Yes.
So I'm excited about that because, you know, you hail from New York City, but you've been living in the States now in Hollywood for some time now, right?
Since 1995.
Nice. So that's 30 years next year.
Can't believe it.
Holy moly. Yeah. That time flies by. Where does time go, really?
I would love to know.
Yeah.
Ask the physicists.
You're like, I'm a scientist, Jimmy.
But I don't know that.
you started in New York, obviously. What was life like in New York for you? I mean, you know, growing up, what was, you know, parents like? And
yeah,
what was that like?
Good question. I have to say, I feel rather blessed for my upbringing.
Sure.
My parents were immigrants, and they saved all their money and bought this big old house with a big piece of property. It was within New York City in Queens. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up, and this property had all kinds of fruit trees and flowering plants. And, you know, the springtime, the entire place would explode in flowers. And it was like my own private park.
And no, private Idaho. Pardon? it was like you basically had your own, you know, greenery, like a green deal going on. Yeah.
Yes. And my mother was a big gardener. She was a vegetable gardener. And
it explains why you have a green thumb as well.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I grew up just in this lovely place where I had a lot of older siblings. I was a change of life baby.
Oh.
And so my mother had me quite late, and she had the others, the other five, because there were six of us, when she was very, very young.
Right.
And so my nieces were very close in age to me.
Like my dad and his nephews, same thing.
Yeah. It's a weird thing, but it's kind of cool, too. It's kind of a fun little thing. Mm-hmm. And so they would all come over, and we'd play in this huge, fantastic yard. And
you had a huge family, like I imagine, because you're like one of the last ones in the family, and you were spoiled, probably.
Well, my sisters spoiled. I don't think I was spoiled. I probably was a little bit, because you know they grew up during the war in Italy, World War II. They were very young, and they had to survive that, and I didn't, you know. So there's that big difference,
huge gap.
Yeah.
But you learned a lot from them. That's a great part about it also.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, the lore and everything that happened, it gets passed down, like when they regale these stories and you're like, wow, okay.
You know, I think that's where my love of storytelling came from. Is actually my father one day, I was married already. And I wasn't particularly interested in my heritage or those kinds of stories. I wanted to be American, you know. I was born in this country. Yeah. I'm American, right?
100%.
Right?
Red, white, and blue, baby.
That's right. And so what happened was, one day my father told me a story about how when he was a young man, he worked at an olive press to make olive oil. And I remember being completely fascinated by that one story. And that became how I interacted with my parents moving forward as an adult. I saw them not as mommy and daddy.
Sure.
Always mommy and daddy, but also as human beings who have their own story.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And who had wonderful stories to tell me that I knew nothing about. And so every time I would hang out with them and see them, which was a lot, I'd record their, I have so many videotapes and audio tapes of their stories, of their life. And I treasure those.
Oh my God.
Because I don't have my parents anymore.
Parents anymore.
Yeah.
I just on that same note, I heard there was a couple of missed messages, missed calls. And if you will, my mom left a couple of messages on there, and I still have those. And I'm going to, like, you know, transcribe them or whatever else, like record them from one device to the other, maybe go old school and just record it and have those. And they do have some video recordings. My mom wasn't one to take pictures. That's the thing. A whole lot of pictures. So you always had to snap them without her knowing. Oh, I'm looking at something on the phone. Snap them in videos too. My son got quite a bit of video. Mom, but that's beautiful that you treasure that. That's a treasure trove, right, in and of itself, because you never get them back.
Yeah.
So that's for all your viewership, all 1.8 million that are watching.
Yes.
Treasure your family, hug them, tell them you love them, because they're here today. It's a fleeting moment, and tomorrow they're gone.
Yeah, and get those stories.
Yeah, get those stories for sure. It used to be that I asked a lot of questions, you know, like, I asked a lot of questions to my folks, because I saw them also slowing down. And as you're getting elderly, you're like, oh, one of these days they're not going to be here anymore. Yes. And I'm going to have a lot of questions. And that's what I'm glad I did that and was able to do that as well. Now, let's talk about the love of animals. You have like chimpanzees, parrots. You have a host of animals at home with your lovable husband. How did you get these rescued? You're like, well, you got a monkey. I'll take them.
That would be crazy.
Whole safari in the backyard.
Oh, no. You know what? I wish.
Wouldn't that be amazing? I mean, utopian, in a utopian world, right? That would happen.
It would. no, I've only had cats and dogs.
Beautiful.
And they've all been rescues.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I didn't grow up with animals.
Right.
So, you know, but my husband did. He grew up with cats.
Beautiful.
And so, mm-hmm. yeah, after we were married about 10 years, he's like, you know, let's get some cats. And I'm like, okay. I said, but they're never coming on the bed. No animals on the bed. Well, like 1 week later, guess who's sleeping with me? My
That's
two
right.
cats,
yeah.
Ben and Jerry. We named them after the ice cream.
Right.
And every baby I've had since then has, you know, slept with us.
Oh,
and
you guys are so lovable.
Well, I think animals are they're
transmit
pure.
That pure love to you and back, yes. and vice versa.
Yes.
Let me ask you something. Ben and Jerry, did you ever get like that Pavlovian kind of thing where like, let's go for some ice cream.
Sure, absolutely. Well, we used to go. That's when Ben and Jerry's first like became a big thing, and
huge
we used to
deal.
Go every week. So
okay,
that was it. Ben and Jerry's.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That's beautiful. And now, like, how many rescues do you have left? You don't mind my asking.
I only have my little dog Basie, Count Basie.
Okay.
After Ben and Jerry, we got Kelsey, who was a rescue husky.
Uh-huh.
And she was amazing. And then we got, after those two kitties passed away, we got Ella after Ella Fitzgerald and
right.
Louis after Louis Armstrong. And then we got Monk.
Uh-huh.
He was a dog we actually found roaming the streets.
This is like a monk because he didn't say anything?
No.
He's an animal.
After Thelonious Monk.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
You gotta be a jazz guy. So,
hey, listen, you guys are, this whole musical inclination has a lot to do with your hubby, right? He's a musician.
Yes. Yes.
That's so rad.
Yeah.
So his music's been always a big part of your life since you married.
Well, even before, because
right.
my dad was a mandolin player and an accordion player.
Get out of town.
Yeah.
My dad played accordion also.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's kind of great.
That's fantastic. Wow.
Yeah.
So around the house has always been music. And obviously you've named your animals different key components and musical virtuosos from the past.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes.
Ella Fitzgerald. Wow.
Ella Fitzgerald, she just passed in August. And 2 months before that, we lost our other dog,
right,
Dizzy.
Right, right.
After Dizzy Gillespie. And it's been a tough year.
Yeah, it has.
And now my little Count Basie is the only one that I have at home now. And he's an old guy and he's going through some stuff. And it kind of hurts to watch that.
Right, right.
It hurts like, you know, what anyone you love that's going through something and you're not quite sure what the right thing is to do sometimes, it just hurts.
It does. I share your pain.
Yeah.
I also, you know, like caring after animals. I mean, was that something you said you didn't have animals growing up,
mm-hmm.
right? Was it because, like, did you live in like an apartment complex or like places where you're not supposed to have animals, or your parents just weren't fond of animals?
My parents grew up in Italy, and those years, animals were considered like livestock. You know, you don't have dogs for pets; they're for guarding the flock, or cats are for catching rodents,
rats,
right?
Rodents.
So
yeah.
right, so no, we so it wasn't even in their.
Okay.
In their
DNA,
purview,
per se.
It wasn't in their DNA to do that.
How when did you get like started in it? When did you decide to, you know, I want to be a scientist of all things. Like, you know, what school did you attend? Let's peel at the layers.
Jimmy, you're amazing. So that's an interesting question. I wasn't a brilliant student. I went to Catholic school for 12 years. So when I was in grade school, you know, in those days, they kind of categorized the kids as smart, medium smart, not so smart, right?
Sure.
And I kind of was bored in school. So I kind of fell into this maybe not so smart category, right? And in seventh grade, I had a science teacher who told me that I was gifted at science. And that sort of
got the ball rolling.
It did something to my confidence. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes teachers, by even a small word, mm-hmm. can change a life.
Some chemical change in your brain, huh? Something happens, yeah. gets yeah. something the needle kind of moving, and you're like, exactly. wait a minute.
And you're like, oh, she sees something that I don't see. Right. I don't know, you know. Yeah. And so then I got into an academic high school, and my okay. science teacher there also said, you need to go into science. Okay. And so I went to community college, I studied clinical science there, and then I went on to SUNY Stony Brook on Long Island, wow. and I got my bachelor's in clinical science, and that's the study of laboratory diagnostics. So when they trained us, they kind of taught us to sort of be the right hand of a physician to assist with diagnostic with diagnoses and yeah. how you reach a diagnosis. So it was a very unique training program. And then I was working in all sorts of different jobs, some of them completely unrelated to science. By that time I was married, and I even worked in interior design for a while.
Wow, look and, at you.
And yeah, I kind of...
Worked different hat.
Different hat. You know, I always loved pretty yeah. things. So,
sure.
And then... I decided I was going to get my master's. So I was working full time in a genetics laboratory. We diagnosed, did you lose the pen?
Yeah.
You got it?
Wow. Trying to get away. You bad boy. Stay there. I got ADHD. You knew that already. I told you several times. I'm always like doing something.
Oh, me too, man. Right, I hear you on that. So anyway, I was working in a genetics lab. I was the supervisor of the amniocentesis laboratory, which is prenatal diagnostics.
Okay.
So people want to know what sex their baby was.
Mm, I see.
So I did that, but I decided at the same time I was going to get my master's degree in molecular biology. And so I was working full-time and going to school part-time. I got my master's, which was, I was the first person in my family to get a college degree, period, and then a master's.
Congratulations. You
know, my parents were, yeah.
Very really, commendable.
Yeah, thank you, Jimmy. Really. It was a big deal. And I'm so, sure. yeah. you know, then I just continued to follow in that. When I moved out here, my husband got a job transfer. That's why I wound up in California.
Right, okay.
And
you stumbled upon the Hollywood stars, and you go to the Walk of Fame. You're like, hey, I can see my name impressed into one of these babies.
It was never that. Not in a million years. Jimmy, I had such stage fright.
Yeah.
I would not in a million years have ever thought that I would act. Like, wow. That's so out of my, you know, what I could see for myself. But in 2005, I saw Joe Wright's Pride and Prejudice.
Okay.
And I fell in love with the director's cut of that movie. And it was the first time that I actually understood that acting is storytelling.
Right.
And by that time, I was so full on into hearing my parents' stories that that connection for me became very powerful. And I decided I was going to overcome my stage fright and I started taking acting classes, mostly at theater first. For the first 10 years, I was theater only. And then...
It's the best kind of training, right?
I love theater.
Think about it.
Yeah. It's...
get on the boards, and then you're like,
yeah.
Every time you do it, it's different.
Yes. And,
it's like jazz.
And terrifying. It's like jazz. It's exactly right. And it's completely terrifying. Yeah. But boy, what a buzz. You know? So
it's like you're living on the edge. Like oh, shoot, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
How am I going to crank it out this year? Tonight's show.
Man, let me
and
tell
it's
you.
It's beautiful, right?
Yeah.
It's so awesome.
I was just cast in, I didn't even tell you this.
Yet. I was going to tell you what you got going. Down the pike, and then you beat me to it. You got some stuff you want to talk about. Unpack, please.
I was just cast as the psychiatrist in the Ojai theater in Agnes of God.
Congrats. It's funny because that was going to be one of my questions that I thought, I don't know. I figured, you know what? I can put this together. I want to know if you used, your scientific background to, as a part in a film somewhere down the line. And here you are, just telling me this. Oh, my God. This is nuts. This is great stuff. Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you.
And we will go see you because, little known fact, my wife is probably watching. All right. Hello, Stephanie. My would-be father-in-law, he passed away before I met her. Oh, but he lived in Ojai for many years.
Oh.
Yeah, he was an artist, So he lived in Ojai.
Yeah.
And photographer. And, it's a lot of artsy people. Johnny Cash lived in Ojai,
Yes.
I'm a huge Johnny Cash fan. So we're going to go out there and make that trek to go see you.
Well, thank you. I believe we open January 24th, I believe.
So that'll be exciting, like the new year, fresh start.
Yeah.
Oh, I can already smell that. The flowers, drink some of that wine up there.
Ojai's got great wine.
It's a great place.
Great
man.
Everything.
Great everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know that Lisa Marie lived there at a boarding school? Did you hear about that? Lisa Marie Presley.
Oh.
Yeah. She lived there in the olden days. Yeah. Somebody told me about that, and I thought that was really cool. Anything that's Ojai related, I want to know.
Ojai's a great town.
It's a great town, huh? So congratulations on that. When did you nab that? Did it just happen?
It just happened about a week ago.
Oh, wow.
And it's...
lucky stars.
It's a really... I don't know that I can use my, science
right.
training for it. But the human being that I get to step into her shoes, she is very... I should say I am because I like to speak in the I when I'm talking about a
That's
role.
Right.
I am very analytical. Yeah. I am very, I don't believe in anything outside of what my mind can fathom. And
it's got to be practicality.
Yes.
It's got to be matter of fact kind of thing.
Yes.
Like you're not like just having these delusional thoughts or, you're not really like an actor per se, but more practical.
Yes. Yeah. That is the human being whose shoes I'm stepping into.
Fantastic.
And so that I can relate to as a scientist for sure.
150%.
Yeah. So
you have to use that side of the brain.
You know what, Jimmy, everything about our lives informs our art.
Totally.
Right.
And this is life imitating art because you were once a scientist. You're retired now, or what happened? Mm-hmm. I didn't ask you.
Yeah, the
quasi
job.
Quasi retired, quasi maybe.
No, I'm definitely retired from my science job. I think I was working in cancer, creating on teams that create diagnostic tests for cancer diagnosis. So the pharmaceutical companies would come to my company and say, hey, we have a brand new therapeutic that, we want to target only the people for whom this drug will work. We don't want to waste people's precious time and energy and resources with medications that are not going to help them. So let's design a test that will tell us which people who have cancer will benefit from our new drug. And so they gave us that huge responsibility to develop those tests.
Bless your heart. And, that's a beautiful thing, though, man.
I have no regrets of my years working. I was there for 23 years.
Wow.
And I feel really good about the work I did. I was so dedicated because it never left my mind ever, not for a split second, the impact of what we were doing.
That's right.
And
it's tremendous.
Yeah, I think when you work in that kind of field, you can never forget who you're doing it for.
Exactly.
So
your fellow women
and fellow men,
because
we also worked on GI cancers and lung cancers. So one of my colleagues and I were largely responsible for the gold standard test for breast cancer. And I can honestly say I'm very proud of that.
That I would be very extremely proud of, and I'm proud of you for that. Seriously,
thank you, Jim.
I mean, we're talking honestly, we're talking to a wonderful person. I mean, guys, give it up for Anna Maria Strickland.
And for Jimmy Mesa.
Yeah. No, it's so awesome. I mean, I'm just learning about, you know, things that I didn't know before. So it's a great place to unpack here on my podcast, Almost Famous, guys. Almost Famous podcast. You could look me up, Jim Francis Mesa, on Google or GoGo. What's that? Duck GoGo Duck or Duck GoGo or something like that. Yeah, I don't know. Some search, whichever search engine you guys have, feel like or that's at your disposal, please do. Follow me. I'll follow you back on IG. I'm excited to learn more about the Rose. I mean, I know in the last year, you've been working on a lot of little films. I mean, you have Taken by the Mafia, First Love, Last Love, Training Wheels. The Medusa, Susie and Jenny, which mm-hmm. we were a part of. I was part of that, even though we didn't shoot at the same time.
Right.
Let me ask you this. How do you train for when you pick up I know you and I have trained together with mm-hmm. The one and only Vince Spano, and mm-hmm. you before that you were working with Harry
Master George. Yes.
God rest his soul. Amazing. I mean, these two names are quite literally amazing to me. We learned so much, but you also have a certain repertoire of different things you do. Do you when you start, you pick up a copy, what are you going to do, the sides and stuff. Do you have meditation? Do you look at the words, let it kind of simmer there for a while and then pick them up and then put them down? People do various things, you know. I can tell you what I do, but we're here to interview you.
I'd love to know. I'd love to know what you
okay.
do.
All right. So I sit quietly, meditate. I pray to God. I meditate. I smoke a joint, and then
what?
I don't smoke. I just ingest the gummy, and then I sit there and literally, I let the role meditate. I mean, obviously when you get sides and you have an idea, usually, I mean, for a film or something, you have an idea what you're going for. So you kind of have an idea. So then I don't watch TV. I don't let anything disturb me at all whatsoever. I just sit there and then my wife will be, do you want that? You want something? Honey, please. No, I'm kidding. She's the only one that could come in the room and say, hey, knock it off. Yeah, there's no way. But I turn the page over. And then I read it once, I read it twice, I read it three times, I read it four times, I read it five times. And then I put it down. I kind of walk away a little bit and I come back. And then I start reading every word on that thing, to get so I can gel with the verbiage. So I want to gel with it little by little, but I don't make any kind of I don't make any choices right there and then. You know, you don't want to get fixated on a choice.
That's right.
And that's one big one. But I want to know the kind of the underlying message each word is telling me. You know, like subliminal. You know, the what is not the context? It's the subtext in it, so to speak. And then I read it and reread it, and then I put it down again, and then I sort of think, and then try to do my research on my own about the character, you know, this character that I'm supposed to play. And then I do more research. And then somehow I feel like when I think I got it, I still don't have it quite yet. Right. So I reread it again. And then I want to obviously learn. You want to learn be off book. But the other thing is I do want to walk away and somehow embody the character. Like I feel like I become this character, you know, like when you emulate something, you just become this character.
Yes.
You just start feeling, and somehow this thing comes over and it takes over your soul almost, and you become this one character. You become one with the character. That's how I feel. I don't know, this is how I go about doing it.
I just love everything you said. I really do.
A lot of it was just thank you, learning, you know, from Vince and other schools that you have a whole repertoire, a toolbox of different experiences and things that you learn along the way.
Yeah.
But I want to know what you do.
Well, okay. So you weren't just talking about sides for an audition. You were talking about actually preparing to be another human, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like for an audition is different. Yeah. Cause then that would just be sides that I'm going to do an audition, a small little snippet of something, but no, for an actual, like if I get the role and then I have like lots of different things I have to learn, then yeah, that's what I would do. Right.
Okay. So I do many similar things. And so I was really happy to hear you say some of those things. So for me, I have never been taught things like, what's your objective? What do you want? What's the overriding? Blah, blah, blah. That works for some people.
Right.
It's nothing I was ever taught to do. And in a way, I'm grateful that I was never really taught to do that.
Right.
Because I feel like you miss the point if it puts you too much up here.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. Prior to studying with Vince, I think I was only with Vincent maybe about 9 months or so. Prior to that, I studied with Vincent's mentor, Harry Master George. Harry was an elder statesman of teaching how to play this game. He called it a child's game. And he taught us to use our imagination and to play pretend, and that it's all about the visceral experience, and that's your job. Your job is to, and he used to always say, for example, Anthony Hopkins read his story. We didn't call it a script. It was a story. We're not characters. We are humans that we're telling their story. Right. And so, he didn't like us to use actor talk because that puts you in an actor's head. Mm-hmm. And
puts you in your head, really, is what you just finished saying.
Exactly. And he was brilliant. And so, it was all about imagination, understanding the circumstances. Many other teachers have said this, but these are the real conditions of your life, of this person that you're portraying.
Sure.
And so when I get a story, I try to read it like it's a novel. I don't read it as an actor. I read it the way you would read a novel, like, oh, what's going to happen next? Or what's that person feeling? Right. You know, all of that. I don't look at it. Oh, where's my lines?
Right. Yeah.
You know?
That's like systematic. It's almost, you're not really fleshing out the character. Right. You're almost robotic. You're almost like,
you got to be careful not to do that. I feel that hems you in.
Right.
So like, for example, right now that I am actually preparing for Agnes of God and there is so much, if something is written well, there is so much detail. You just have to open your heart to it.
It's just there.
It's just there if it's written.
Yeah. If it's written correctly and, it gives you everything you need.
100% spot on. And this play is, there's so much there. I mean, I'm constantly fascinated as I read it and absorb it. Mm-hmm. What is going on inside me as the psychiatrist?
Something's
like blowing my mind. Oh my gosh. And the story is actually quite devastating. And at our first rehearsal a couple of days ago, I actually experienced inside my heart her pain at the end of the story, which is quite profound. And I couldn't shake it. For about 8 hours, I could not shake.
You went home this way.
Yeah, and that's never happened to me before. I don't think I've ever played or knew how to be another person as much as I do now at this point.
Right.
And I experienced her life and everything that was happening to her in this play so profoundly that I went home and I said to my husband, oh my gosh, I said, I have this like nervous stomach. I have this pit in my
not in the
oh my
pit of your stomach.
Yeah, I did. And I said to him, how am I gonna do this night after night on stage if that's what I'm going to feel every time, you know? So I have to, I mean, part of the part of what you learn to do as you get more experience is to leave it. and not bring it home.
Right.
And so I have to
Good thing you're not a killer, right?
In this Hannibal Lecter. Like, Anthony Hopkins was like, someone asked him that, actually. Yeah, they're like, how do you go home and have dinner after you've been, you know, a cannibal all day? He's like, it's make-believe. I leave it on the set.
There you go. Thank God you were in method, right?
No method, man. Not for me.
Oh my God. Did you like, do you think you faced any challenges when you like started acting this whole thing, you know, acting? Like, did you have any preconceived notions as to I'm going to go in there and I'm going to kill, like before, prior to learning anything about the business?
You know, everyone I think starts out thinking they can play this game.
Right.
It's not an easy game.
It's a crazy gamblet, huh?
It's you have to have a lot of resilience. There's, I don't want to say it's rejection. It's not rejection. It's just there's a thousand reasons why you might not get a role.
Well, you're not the right casting.
Casting is everything.
Yeah. Let's say it's finest. Just you're not the right casting.
That's right.
Eventually, you'll get your casting when your time is right.
That
All it takes is one good door to open. That's for sure.
That's it. And so I think you have to develop a resilience, a belief in yourself. I think that you
ironclad belief that you can do it.
Not always. Believe me, there's plenty of days I sit there and say, why am I putting myself through this?
Yeah.
Plenty of times.
But it's a hobby at the end of the day for us, for you and I.
Yeah.
It's not our bread and butter. So
it's not at this point. I would like it to be
my bread and butter. It would be a nice bread and nice butter, right? Yeah. It'd be so good.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, I take it very seriously and I want to be, you know, I don't know about you, Jimmy, but I felt I was really good at my science job.
Yeah.
And when I undertake something, I want to
excel.
I want to excel at it. I don't just do things halfway.
No half-assing anything.
No, and you don't either.
No.
And so
I'm pretty much, I will say I have like some level of autism because everything I've ever, you know, like undergone or, you know, undertaken, I've done quite well. I was a limo driver and I did spotless. I mean, I never had an issue with getting people to and from in this crazy city, the hustle and bustle in LA.
Yes.
You go out there, take a look at the 101. It's awful. I had to find plan B prior to having GPS, even before GPS.
Right.
So you had to get Thomas to and Map. From. And then you're calling, you're on the phone with like their agents, with their handlers. Like, hey, how long is it going to take? What's your ETA to this? How long till you get to Warner Brothers Studios? We got him on for Jay Leno. He's on the second. I had to deal with all that on my shoulders. And the person in the back was like too busy filing their nails or on the phone like, oh, my God, did you really? Did that just happen? Oh, wait, am I going to be boarding a plane tonight, so-and-so? Okay, no problem. Hi, Jim, you know, how long is it to Warner Brothers? Oh, okay, you're going to worry about that with my guy. Okay, no problem. And they would sit back and enjoy the freaking ride literally while I'm like, tearing my hair apart. How in the world just discombobulated? How am I going to get to the place on location at this time? It's unfeasible. So, but everything I did, I always figured five different ways to get to one place.
Wow.
And then I always figured that in my head. This is with the Thomas Guide. Most people watching don't know what a Thomas Guide is, you know? And
I loved them.
Right. Because now it's like the first. And real quick, just to get off topic, the first GPS was the Magellan, I think, the Magellan.
That's right.
And it was so hard. I remember one time it found and hit my toe. I was in pain. I was like, what the hell? What is that? It's like a weapon. It looked like a gun. And thankfully, it was no gun. I picked it. Oh, my God. It's a freaking GPS.
It was
monstrous.
Yeah.
And then if the sun hit it too long, oh, shit, we're in deep shit. I got stories for days that we could talk about off. Yeah, because, I mean, we'd be here all day, and I really want to learn more about you, Anna. But those were some of the challenges that I had to undergo just driving. And I'm talking about driving, you name it, like big freaking names in the business that needed to get to a concert to sing to thousands of people. Like, I remember one time we're stuck in traffic for Fergie and her bodyguard, you know, and I remember Pascal was her bodyguard, the same guy that got accused by the Kardashians, by the way, guys, about taking the jewelry, I believe, and all this other stuff that happened in London.
Wow.
Yeah, I know this guy for so long. He was a bodyguard, and he was like, Don't worry, bro. Just relax. We'll get there when we get there. We're stuck and literally 10 minutes away from back in the Staples Center, 10 minutes away. And we're like, oh my God, dude, are we ever going to get there? Traffic is rough. I decided to get off and go through the back streets, through alleyways. We're driving, like, people are probably like, have no idea Fergie's in the back of the SUV. We're doing 100 easily. You know, like, just I'm running on all cylinders trying to get her to there. It's like an adrenaline rush. Basically, like a cop pursuit, getting into the alleys, taking red lights. At one point, just taking the red light. We were so, like, infamous for taking red lights. So many. So I just got myself in trouble, guys. But anyway, everything we did, 150%. So I believe that's exactly what you've done, and it's awesome, man. I mean, is there any other way of doing it? If you half-ass everything in life, you're really never good at anything.
I wasn't taught to half-ass anything, so I don't know. But I just want to say, listening to that story, my anxiety level is through this roof. I'm like, oh my gosh, that would have made me insane.
believe you me, there was so many times when I had people in the car. I remember one time I had Beyonce, real quick, Beyonce's sister, and she was drunk in the car. She's always fucked up in the car. She's like, can you just bust a bitch here? Bust a bitch. There's so much traffic. And I want to go the opposite way. I'm like, the opposite where? Where are we going? She had no idea where we're going. She's just taking me on a – I was like chasing what? Like chasing our tail. I said, I can't bust a U-turn. I'm going to – first of all, there's so many people here.
Yes.
Number two, I'm the one stuck with the bill, literally. I'm going to get, you know, billed. And number three, it's like, you don't even know which way we're going.
I can't even imagine.
Get shit faced in the back and mind your own business. That's let me do the driving.
Yeah.
Anyway, that said, let's continue our conversation. Mm-hmm. We don't have that much time, by the way.
Oh.
So let's hurry up. Okay. So where were we?
I don't know.
We were somewhere in the
so
valley.
Many places. I don't know.
So tell me, life at home.
Yeah.
Life at home. How peaceful is it? You live in a nice part of town where it's so like everything is sprawled out, right?
I'm in Ventura County.
That's beautiful.
And
my wife's from Ventura County.
Yeah,
Camarillo.
Yeah, and I'm a few towns up, and the weather's fabulous, and
awesome.
It's a quiet little town.
Beautiful.
And I like being there. And home life, well, I'm a little disorganized at home, to be perfect.
Aren't we all? Yeah. All artists are I mean, I don't know one that's totally organized.
Is that true that you think? I would guess that would be true. Yes. And so my poor husband, he puts up with my, I'm organized in my mind.
Right. You are.
Like, I know that little pile of papers contains X, Y, Z.
Sure.
And that little pile of papers contains, but it wouldn't be obvious to anyone.
Right.
Except me. So,
he's trying to make sense out of the nonsense. He's like, wait a minute, what the fuck's going on? And you're like, don't touch that little deal there, because
that's right.
That's where I have that packet I need. And
then
there's that script here. And then
so
there's
so funny you said that, because I just said to him the other day, I said, did you throw away X, Y, Z? And he says, I value my life. No, I did not.
Walt said, that's kind of how it is with me. But in my house, my girls, she organizes everything to... She's organized to the hilt. I mean, everything is just in proper order. And I come in and I'm like the Tasmanian devil. And then she goes, no, don't do this, because everything was just fine. And I'm like, it was. But I think that's kind of how we think.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the way our brains are wired, you know, artists tend to be that way.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, my mom, in many ways, I channel my mom, because at her house, which is now it's like an antique shop. Like, we have so much stuff. Anytime somebody goes, do you want this? My mom would say, sure, I can find a place for that. And my dad was like, oh my God, what's going on? I feel like I can't breathe here anymore. Because it was
so
everything
many.
Was stuffy and like hoarding. They're just hoarding stuff.
Yeah.
And at one point I found something that I had. I go, oh my God, this is like from the 1980s. You still have it, Mom? And she's like, yeah, I keep everything. And I love it, because everything somehow was in order for her.
Yeah.
Everybody else is organized chaos. Like, dude, this is nuts. How do you guys have everything, but yet your mom knows where she leaves things?
Yes, like, I love that your mom did that.
Yeah. I channel the same kind of – I'm the same way. And, you know, scatterbrain, all over the place, ADHD. But yet somehow I like to think that in a weird fashion I'm still organized.
Exactly. We're organized in our own very unique
way.
I am definitely not one of those. I remember I bought a book once on organizing called Organizing on the Left Side of the Brain. Which one is the creative side? Is the right side of the brain or the left side?
I think the right side.
Okay. So it was called organizing with the right side of the brain, with the creative side.
Yeah.
And I read it and I was like, that's me.
Yeah, it's totally
that's
you.
Me.
You felt a lot of like, oh my God, huh? Like, dude, that is so me.
Yeah.
Every time you read that, you know, I thought the same thing because in the past, you know, I don't do a whole lot of reading other than if we get a script or a novel, right? A paper. Right. We get a couple of papers and you read, but I really don't read as much as I used to when I was a kid. Boy, my mom would make me read both English and Spanish.
Could
read thoroughly. And we would have to do an oral book report to mom, my sister too. It's beautiful.
Great. That's beautiful.
And so nowadays I don't do a whole lot of, but when I was younger, I did like a lot of Tony Robbins books, you know. My first book in high school was Awakening the Giant. My friend was like, what the fuck is this, bro? It's like, where's the weed? It doesn't say anything about weed or acid or anything substantially, you know, good anyway, half decent for a high schooler. Like, dude, what's wrong with you? And I was that guy. I was always nerdy, but I had to keep it like in the closet, so to speak. Nobody was supposed to know. It was a taboo to talk about.
No one can know how smart you were, Jimmy.
Isn't that nuts? But I'm super excited. I mean, we're down to the wire. I like to know. You're welcome to come. You need to come back for part two.
Anytime.
Because we need to talk way more. I mean, we haven't even like scratched the surface, and we got to talk some more. How do people find you? Where can they follow you on Instagram? Are you TikTok?
Thank you for asking.
Are you MySpace?
Oh, God, MySpace. I remember like going, what the heck is this thing?
Wait, my pager is beeping. Beep, beep.
Yeah, really. I am on Instagram. My Instagram handle is Strictly AM. So Strictly for Strickland. Right. So STRICKLY. AM for Anna Maria. Mm-hmm. That does not mean I am a morning person. It's my initials.
So, she's an AM person.
No, I'm not. I'm definitely
all
a night
person. Aren't we all? Like, we just don't like waking up so early in
the
morning.
No. I think actually it's one of the hardest things about this job is that you have to get up early. Yeah. But anyway.
Call time is 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
Seriously, sure it's not 5 p.m.?
Yeah, exactly. I'm always like, and you just sent me the call sheet at 11 p.m. and you want me there at 6 a.m. What?
Like, how's that?
So it's at Strictly AM, and that's where you can find me.
Awesome. Otherwise, you know where to find her. You could find her on Almost Famous.
That's right.
Wednesday night, 8 o'clock. It's going to be jamming. We're going to be kicking some ass tomorrow night. I'm really excited to have you come back because we can also like sort of fine tune some of the stuff we want to talk about. I mean, there's just so much we can, we're so multidimensional. There's so much going on about us and it's hard to you know, peel out all the layers of we like to talk about, but I really, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you for this time and for coming out here and making a trek all the way down here. I understand you had to fly your jet and park it right here at the Van Nuys Airport. For all of you guys watching, I am super delighted and happy to have my good friend here, Anna Maria Strickland. I want to thank all of you guys for tuning in week after week. It's been a tough week for me, so bear with me before I get on my marbles again and get myself my bearings and I'm able to wrap my head around the whole thing that happened. I think we're still reeling from it.
Yes.
In some way, you know, I put it on hold, I put everything on pause because I wanted to come do this interview, and I'm also trying to stay as positive and as busy as I possibly can. So anyone needs some yard work or something, I can go work. I'm just kidding. You got any, voiceovers? You got any films that we could be a part of? You know, feel free to reach out. I'd love that. So how random would it be to somebody go, hey, I can use both of these people in my film?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
You know, that'd be pretty cool. It'd be pretty badass. But otherwise, just delighted to have you on. Thank you once again for making the trip up here.
I thank you, Jimmy. And as I told you, I will be keeping your mom in the front of my heart, and Angelica Stein Mesa. Mm-hmm. And as I've said to you several times, she must have been amazing to make a man like you.
Thank you. So, that's very beautiful. And with that, guys, that is my show. Thank you once again. Until we meet again. Thanks. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Almost Famous with Jim Francis Meza, only on LA Talk Radio.